Today's program is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, a co-working and event space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Elena Santigate. So, from Whole Foods to Murray's to owning his very own cheese shop, Aaron Foster is a rare breed, monger turned owner. Boom, boom. Foster Sundry is located in Bushwick, Brooklyn, not too far from our studio at Roberta's, in fact. And Aaron is very much at the helm. I'm very excited to be hanging out with Aaron today in the studio and also looking forward to a new fun element here at Cutting the Curd. Listeners, Aaron will be joining the show as one of our rotating hosts in the coming months. Yeah! Aaron, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for having me back and inviting me on to be a part of the team.
Yes, we're very excited. To get started, I wanted to share a few quick facts about Aaron's shop, Foster Sundry. Listeners, it's been open for 3 years. They have 15 employees. Major categories, Aaron, correct me if I miss anything here, but coffee, cheese.
Correct. Yes.
Butcher counter.
There.
Fresh produce.
Absolutely.
Retail packaged goods, of
course.
Have
lots of those, yeah.
Prepared foods.
Yes.
And beer.
And beer. Most importantly, some days beer.
Yeah. Really clutch element there. And final quick fact, the business is profitable.
Yeah, I didn't realize it is. It's true.
Barely,
but we're there.
Hey, you know, once you cross that line, you're in a new realm.
That's great.
So is that a recent development?
Pretty recent.
Yeah. 3 years in?
Yeah, 3 years in. I would say sometime last year, I think we were on the books profitable at the end of last, so what is that, 2016, the year of 2016, 27. So 2017, we showed a profit. And then this year so far, we've been holding our own. I'm actually paying myself. I mean, if we're talking about the benchmarks of small business ownership.
Getting your own, getting a paycheck for your own
getting
time
a paycheck,
and effort, that's pretty huge.
That's a big one. That was definitely great.
And that was this year, 2018.
That was this year for the first time. I did not pay myself a cent. I'm sure I expensed some beers and took home some steaks, but I did not actually pay myself cash money until this past February.
You're on the books.
And then we showed a profit last year, but again, I didn't take any paychecks.
It wasn't quite realistic.
In that sense. This is something that a lot of small business owners have told me and were like, you know, until you're really doing that, you can't your business can fly on its own.
Right.
And make a living, otherwise it's sort of phantom money.
Right. Not quite sustainable.
Not quite sustainable, yeah.
So does that align with what you expected in terms of timeline for profitability?
It kind of does. I would say that like the plans that I made in setting up the business, they more or less met my benchmarks, although I wouldn't say that they did it in the way that I expected them to. So like I thought we'd sell a lot more cheese. But as a pretty diverse shop with a lot of different products that we ticked off at the beginning, cheese is an important part, but it's certainly not our biggest like top line revenue driver.
And you kind of went out the gates. I mean, your experience has been mostly cheese.
Yeah,
I was buyer at Whole Foods.
Aaron, mostly cheese Foster.
That's what I call you.
I may be made of mostly cheese.
I always thought that was true. I mean, I'm hoping
it's all that's true. Yeah. I mean, that's it's mostly cheese. You can't see through the radio, but it is.
Listeners, it is. So you thought it'd be more cheese,
but it's pretty diverse. I think one area where we both failed and succeeded is that as a diverse shop, we have a lot of different revenue streams, different channels, which means when one drops, like people don't buy that much cheese in the summer. It's a sort of common cheese retail rule of thumb. Right. But we sell a lot of burgers and sausages and iced coffee. And that sort of covers that. And then when people are buying cheese in the winter, they're not buying as many hamburgers or iced coffees.
Interesting. So the variety really makes up for it there.
It does. The downside of that is that you have to have a lot more labor to make your shop work when you have all of these different sales channels.
Yeah, you know, I was actually surprised to see that it was only 15 employees. I thought it was actually more.
Oh, but well, it does depend on the day. It does depend on the day.
How many people are working in the store right now?
Right now, probably 9 or 10. Well, it's after 3, so yeah.
This is
6 or 7.
Okay.
But we had at least 10 different people in there today.
Okay. Wow.
And pretty average day. Yeah.
How, from a staffing standpoint, was that an expectation of yours that you would have sort of a larger crew and that labor would be high, or did you quickly
realize? We definitely
have
more staff than, I alluded to a success or a good part of having a diverse product set,
yeah.
But the downside is you need all the labor to cover that.
Right.
And so I probably did not give myself an accurate representation of how many bodies I would need to cover the shop at any given time. I mean, we opened with a skeleton crew and I was everywhere there from 6 in the morning until after midnight night for months.
Long days.
It was brutal.
How long did that last?
Pre-opening, it was probably about 6 months, and then post-opening, probably at least another 6 months. And then it was still 7 days a week, but more
shorter
like...
days.
Yeah, 9 to 7 or
so somewhat reasonable.
Right. And it's only this year and maybe late last year that I'm not working a cheese shift every day in addition to running the business.
So you're not on the schedule in terms of floor position.
I desperately try not to be.
Yeah. It's good. Guard that, right?
Oh, it's
you need to.
I need to. My life, my marriage, my whole existence needs that.
So on this theme of expectations, that's another one that I always have for people who do something, you know, bold and entrepreneurial and risky. It's like, you know, what did you expect your life to look like? And what does it look like?
That's a great question. I think when you're doing it for the first time, you are, and I say that as someone who's working on opening a second shop.
Mm-hmm. More on that soon.
More on that soon. I can't talk about it right now, but I will share at some point. You're full of excitement. You're full of this ambition and desire to do something. Most people open shops because they feel like they can do something better than other places they've worked or better than other shops they've been to.
Is that why you opened a shop?
I think a little bit. I mean, I've worked my fair share of jobs in cheese. I wouldn't say that I've been like, I've worked a number of jobs.
Yeah.
I've been around, let's say that.
Well, you opened a few locations for Whole Foods.
I did. I opened a few
Whole Foods.
Two different
stores in Manhattan, right?
Yep.
And you were on the, I mean, you were early crew
for
Murray's.
A half dozen other Whole Foods total.
Ah, got it.
Pretty early crew for Murray's, relatively recently after they moved to the new location in the West Village.
And there you were in retail and then on the buying team, or did you go straight to the
I went right to the buying team, which is pretty unusual. Mm-hmm. I was probably one of the earlier hires that they've hired that didn't come up through the retail ranks first. But they were just kind of getting big enough at that point where they needed someone with buying experience and that, you know, came into the place with experience instead of kind of get it on the counter.
Right.
And buying from Murray's is a pretty sophisticated...
nice gig.
It's a nice gig, but it was a lot of products and a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Mm. Yeah, the buying team has always been larger than I expected it to be there.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, I think the year that I left, it was probably purchasing something like $10 or $12 million in cheese or more.
Yeah, nice.
Significantly more than that, actually. So it's... you know, had thousands and thousands and thousands of tons of cheese.
Mm. Yikes.
It's weird. I came across a, you know, Facebook shows you those memories. And
oh, yeah. What you posted always, 5 years ago
yeah,
today.
Yeah. It's in a lot of times like, why do you do that? Why are you
sticking
an elbow in my ribs? Facebook.
I don't want to see this.
But it showed me a photo from the holidays there where I'm just sitting on a towering pallet of manchego.
Oh, nice.
Like it's, you know, my feet aren't anywhere close to the ground. I don't know how I must have had a forklift put me up there. It's that high.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe we'll post it to the Heritage.
Yeah. I think we have to now. Our listeners are going to be dying to see this.
I think so.
Okay. So yeah, you came through all these things, but in terms of like your motivation, like how much of it was, you know, along the way you're thinking, I would do it a little differently, or, these people kind of suck.
It's a little bit. I mean, it's a mix of that. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's like, I think anyone who works for another person never 100% agrees with that person. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a really boring scenario.
Yeah. Not maximizing the situation in that case.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you get what you want and you get to make a decision, and sometimes you don't, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. I have definitely sort of worked for a lot of retail, a lot of distribution, a lot of wholesale. Mm-hmm. I had a pretty good understanding of how the supply chain worked and what things were supposed to cost. Mm. And I guess I just thought, like, I really enjoy the hospitality angle of it. And mm-hmm. I really wanted a place where I could be like, this is mine. Welcome. Let me show you, kind of, let me buy you a cup of coffee. Let me show you around. Let me taste you on the cheese that I'm excited about.
Right.
And not just like the ones that the Alto Adige, you know, consortium tells me that I need to sell that month or whatever.
Right. Now, it's funny you say that, because when I describe your shop to people, I say, this is not a cheese shop. This is a hospitality business. And in terms of new shops in New York, I'm not used to that. You know, I'm used to it at Gramercy Tavern. That's where I expect it. The first time I walked in your shop and experienced it that way, I was pretty blown away.
Well, I'm glad you don't say, this is not a cheese shop, it's on a rough corner, you should be just aware of that before you go. And
no.
I'm not sure that it started out that way explicitly, but definitely implicitly. Like, one of the things I hate, I mean, a lot, they say, like, about relationships, it's not like we love all the same things, but it's we hate all the same people is what makes a relationship really good.
Interesting,
you know, the
perspective.
The thing with me that is, I've always hated a lot of cheese shops for being so snooty and pretentious, and I've hated butcher shops for being macho and chauvinistic, and wine shops for being, you know, snooty and pretentious again. And I really just wanted to do something to subvert that.
Yeah.
And I thought that I could open a shop where we could sell great cheese and carry it and do all the stuff we need to do without making it intimidating for people.
Yeah.
I've always found that extremely frustrating. And you know, this assumption that the customer either doesn't know how to buy cheese, and so we just have to tell them what we think. Mm-hmm. Or otherwise, for lack of a better word, mansplain cheese to people is offensive.
Yeah. Especially since taste is so subjective, and people are going to like what they like, and that it's more about enhancing their experience and having fun with all of it, right?
I agree. I mean, I've always felt that, like, the most sort of exhilarating part of owning a shop and of being a monger is telling the stories and putting people into cheese that excites them. Like, I sound like putting it that way sort of makes it sound like I'm a used car dealer. Like, we're going to put you in a, you know, a used Mazda Miata.
Wait till you see this beauty.
She's a little rickety, but she'll get you where you're going for a great price.
And the smell might linger.
That's right. The smell does linger. But I, you know, I really think that, like, we have the right product. If you've got a great, well-curated counter, you've got the right product for everyone. And it's a matter of kind of discerning what kind of customer they are, but also asking the right questions and being friendly and being open and being sensitive to their, you know, to their level of knowledge and intimidation. You don't want to assume too much, but you also can't assume too little.
Right.
And that's, I think, what great hospitality in general is, right? It's about anticipating need.
Right.
And trying to make that process as seamless as possible.
Totally.
So, like, you go to a fancy French restaurant like Danielle, the hospitality is excellent and top-notch, but it is extremely oppressive. And
yeah, and also, I don't know. I mean, my husband and I drop crazy cash on meals out, right?
Oh, I wasn't sure where that was going.
Well, we do. And sometimes we'll go to a place like Danielle, or like super highbrow, French, fancy, supposedly the greatest hospitality. And the service isn't really applicable to us. Like, forcing someone to wear a jacket or something. It's like, that's not the kind of customers we are, but we're still interested in the food and the experience. But
yeah, there's something lacking or something awkward there. I always feel tremendously awkward. Like, I don't like to go to restaurants where I'm forced to wear a jacket.
No,
that annoys me.
I think
me.
We're pretty much done with that after the last couple of experiences.
I went to one recently, actually, and that was outside the city, and I was just so annoyed that I had, like, in the city, I feel like you can go pretty much anywhere and wear jeans.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're a nice pair of jeans, you can get away with it. But I guess to bring it back to the shop, that, like, that's not an example of great, that's an example of, like, sort of finely tuned hospitality.
Yeah, like, and also rigid.
And very rigid, right. And very oppressive. I like, you know, for me, I think Gramercy Tavern you brought up is just a great example. The Danny Meyer restaurants,
the best.
You know, over the years have been really great at this. Mm-hmm. The idea is to be there, be available, show you that they care. Like, I know we have to take a break, but I'll give you an example with my staff.
No rush here.
My staff is totally, like, we, you know, I'm very, very clear, no sweethearting, you know, don't, like, make something less on the scale to give your friend a break or to give somebody a break.
Right.
But you are 100%, like, welcome to give a discount or buy somebody a coffee or whatever it is at the register and just say, hey, we got this today. It's on us. Or I'm really sorry we messed up the last time. Or I heard you didn't like the cheese you took home. Or, hey, it's your birthday. Or, hey, it's nice to meet you. I'm glad you brought your mom in on Mother's Day.
Yeah, that freedom, like, giving the staff that freedom goes a super long way, I'm sure.
I think it makes them respect the, like, the process and understand that there's a point to it. Like, we don't do coffee loyalty cards. I just don't believe in that because I think that it makes that hospitality experience extremely robotic.
Yeah, it makes it transactional in a way that
it
you...
Transactional even though, is a great word.
Even though it is a transaction, it's less natural, right?
Instead, you know, we say, like, keep you know who your regulars are.
Right.
Ask them, and I'll do this all the time. It's like, hey, has anybody bought your coffee here lately? And the person was like, what? I was like, yeah, has anybody given you a free coffee? And they're like, no. I was like, great. I got your coffee
it's
today.
It's almost better that way because, like,
it's surprises and delights.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
Surprise and delight. Thank you very much.
And I mean, I borrow that phrase. That's a common retail phrase, but it's Whole Foods. That was one of their core values for a long time. And that always resonated with
me. It's a great value.
I think the early Whole Foods, counters were more like that. But having that autonomy, to be able to do that at the register.
Right. Not having to ask a manager to do it.
Exactly. Or, it keeps it uncomplicated and we track it so I can see, you know, if it's, and it's built into our model. So, like, I know that, you know, we're going to lose 2-3% on sort of miscellaneous discounts every month. And, like, that's built into the model and has been from the beginning.
That's great.
As long as that stays on the number that I expect it, then we're fine.
So fun.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to take that quick break now. And we'll be back in a moment for more cheese chatting with Aaron Foster of Foster Sundry and soon to be regular host here at Cutting the Curd.
Yes. Host with most.
Bogart has made much progress over the past year since their grand opening. They are a growing community of professional freelancers, entrepreneurs, and startups. Their dedicated team guarantees you receive a productive and worry-free work environment. 100 Bogart is currently filling up their 2-person to 12-person private offices. The spacious pop-up gallery, premier rooftop, and brand new full floor with terrace are available for your next event. Podcast rooms, conference rooms, and meeting spaces are also available for booking. 100 Bogart hosts events like art exhibitions, pop-up stores, product launches, and fashion shows. Heritage Radio Network is a proud member of the 100 Bogart community and often holds events in the building. Visit 100bogart.com to schedule a tour and learn more.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. This is your host, Elena Santigade, and I'm chatting today with Aaron Foster, local cheese shop owner and newest member of the Cutting the Curd family.
Yeah, it's host to host right now.
Yeah, we're host to host in the studio. toe-to-toe, host-to-host? You know,
curd
sure.
To curd, curd no? to yeah.
cheese to...
Let's just move on.
Okay, so...
What's it now that I'm a host? Can we edit that out? What
happened? Our shows are live.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, warning on that one. Watch out. Okay, so we've been talking about Foster Sundry and your experience and what you're bringing to this new 3-year-old baby business of yours. Tell me, I want to kind of get hyper detailed here for a second because I really geek out on the human experience on a day-to-day sort of level. What is your daily schedule like at this point? Is it totally all over the place? Is it kind of the same day to day? Like, what are you doing with your time? What happens?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Right now, I would say for the last 3 or 4 months over the summertime, mm-hmm. it's been pretty... These days I cover maybe 1 or 2 actual shifts a week. Mm-hmm. Closer to 1 over the summertime, but next week it's going to be 4 or 5 because 2 of my managers are getting married to each other.
To each other. That's, yes. It's, you know, great to have love in the store, but for the schedule.
Just bad for the schedule, great for love. I'm just glad they're not taking a super long honeymoon.
I guess those are those shifts your wedding present?
Yeah, right. Those shifts plus a lovely duvet cover. So, yeah, right now my sort of day-to-day is I usually will come in around 10. Nice. And stick around until 4, depending on the day. And so during the day, I might, a lot of it's like administrative, paying bills, mm-hmm. You know, making sure all the displays look the way I want them to look. So I have the retail eye or the hands.
Right.
So I'm always sort of tweaking or micro-correcting. Like I give my staff a lot of autonomy, as I sort of said before, not just mm-hmm. at the register, but in general to kind of make decisions. But that doesn't mean that I don't give them feedback on the decisions that they've made and say, okay, I see why you did X, Y, Z, or tell me why you did X, Y, or Z.
Right.
Here's what I would have done based on the information I have in the future.
Right.
I'll usually help out on major delivery days just to get things like put away and set up. A lot of it's just, you know, accounting, right. HR, scheduling. These days it's counting the money every
nice,
Monday.
Nice.
Which is like, used to be fun to like sit there with a big stack of money, but now is really tedious and dirty. Like
yes, wear gloves for that.
Yeah, it's not clean.
No.
Definitely not in Bushwick.
but you think the money is dirtier in Bushwick than, let's see, you opened a shop on the Bowery. So that's good. That seems fair. Comparable in my mind. Think about it. Dirtier money.
I'm going to say, yeah. I'm going to, just knowing some of our customers, I'm going to say, yeah, it's dirtier.
Listeners, I want you to like tweet at us.
I'm not casting aspersions.
We're at Cutting the Curd. No, I want to do a poll. Like, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. Good question.
Bowery versus Bushwick. Which money is dirtier?
Maybe it's West Village because it's all that hedge fund money and shit. That's the real dirty money.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, if we're getting hot, like,
oh, another host question. What's my swearing? Can I swear?
You could totally swear.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't swear a lot. Oddly, I do in real life.
Right.
No, but I think I forget. I worry and I don't realize I can swear in here.
You're more intimidated by swearing when you have a giant microphone immediately next to your mouth.
I think that's a good instinct, but I'm working on it
for your next, you know, when you're on Kitchen Sisters or whatever.
Yeah, you know. I think I'll need it then.
So anyway, that's my days. My days are pretty all over the place, but like they're spent doing design work for our, like, I'm just trying to think of what I did this week.
Yeah. What did you do?
So, I think I slept in one day, which was great. I did some deliveries for catering orders. Mm-hmm. I did a bunch of orders this, like cheese orders for the week.
Mm-hmm.
Did some firing and some hiring.
Inevitable. Yeah, that was a part big of deal. The job.
It was a holiday on Monday, so we were extremely busy with mm-hmm. hungover breakfast brunch traffic. So I was working the register. I do love to come in on the weekends.
Yeah,
I've been trying to keep Sunday for my wife and I, but and that's only a pretty recent development.
Yeah, where you don't go to the store at all on a Sunday.
Right. So for the first 2 years. 2 years plus, I went to the store every day. I just did. I think we took one very short vacation, and the first real vacation we took, as we went to Iceland for 5 days, and as soon as I landed, I got a call saying all my refrigerators went down.
No. Oh, so, my gosh.
I've had like many of those situations.
Refrigeration is...
It is unbelievable.
It's like your nemesis. It's like a demon in your home.
It just seems like something we should have gotten right over the last 100 years or so.
Can't we figure that out?
It just doesn't work. And now I know today, for example, I'm going to have my staff double check all the temps on all the cases, mm-hmm. And do some resets and things just to make sure everything's happy. It's about 100 degrees out here.
I used to have the phone number for a dry ice spot in Hell's Kitchen on my phone.
Yeah.
I've been
to that spot.
Yeah, it's a great spot. I mean, that's the only place where you can buy it
by 24/7
by the 5 pound piece, which,
right, instead of the larger pieces. Yeah. Yeah. from one cheese person to another. Yeah. I've been there. I've done that.
Okay, so wait, for 2 years you went every day. Now you're starting to do
Sundays. Now I try
Sundays
to take Sundays off.
Off.
I do like to go on Saturdays and work the register, particularly during the lunch rush, because mm-hmm. I really, not going on Sundays, I do miss a lot of our long-term family customers.
Yeah. Your weekend regulars.
We get a lot of families, particularly on the weekends, and it's always nice to catch up with them. I love working. I really love working the register. I genuinely like it.
Yeah, it's like you're directing the show. You get to interact.
Yeah,
with
it's
everybody.
Like expediting a little bit. But I get to see I get to see people that I don't get to see that often and check in and be like, mm-hmm. hey, I how's the new baby, or how's the marriage, or how's the divorce, or whatever.
The retailer, you get to exercise that retailer muscle.
I get to schmooze.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the hospitality side of things. And I think people really appreciate it.
And I'm glad you're keeping that in your world, because I think that even from my experience opening shops and managing, you can get pulled so far from the front lines of the business that unless you create that space for yourself or prioritize that, I mean, it's one thing to jump in when you're short-staffed, but to actually make it a regular part of what you're doing, I think is why that hospitality feeling continues.
I think that's true. I genuinely look forward to working the register. Hmm. I enjoy it, but we'll see. During the holidays, I expect it'll be more just behind the counter.
Yeah, just slinging cheese.
And then also it's possible that this new business will take me away, not far away, but somewhat away from mm-hmm. the shop. In which case I will maybe be there. It's a new business I'm opening nearby my shop. That's all I can say for now.
Okay. Mom's the word.
Mom is the word.
So when do you think about your cheese selection?
I'm an insomniac, so mostly in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But the showers are great. Yeah. I listen to podcasts in the shower, so.
Ooh.
I highly recommend it. The Daily.
That's my morning podcast while I make my coffee.
Yeah. For me, I have one of those boom speakers in the shower. It's great.
I gotta get one.
They're great. Not sponsored, by the way.
Okay, yeah. This is just us host to host, toe to toe.
Host to host, toe to curd, curd to something.
Curd
to schmurd. So
in the middle of the night, you wake up.
Yeah.
And you think about your cheese selection.
I do. I mean, in the middle of the night, I wake up and think about everything.
Yeah.
I don't sleep from 3 to 6. So.
And is that a new thing?
That's been a thing for a long time. But it's certainly owning a shop and the stress that accompanies it has not helped that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, finally, the stress. It's funny. In my personal life, I feel like as a family, we've just sort of. By which I mean my wife and I have
and don't you have a dog
and a lovely dog? Yes,
don't forget
Mr.
about
Todd.
That.
Yeah, forgive me for not mentioning him. we'll put a picture of him up as well.
Yeah.
We kind of just got to the point as a couple where we're responsible financial people and have our bills paid and all that stuff, and we're not necessarily living immediately check to check.
Right.
And as soon as we became adults in that way. Opened a shop where I have to count every single penny and dot every I and cross every T and make sure everything. And so I feel like we're finally getting to that point in the shop now where my staff can write a check to a vendor.
And not worry.
And not be Foster, this is okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is great. And I'm knocking
stress
on wood.
Stress relief
but,
there.
Yeah. It's huge. It's huge. And it's a learning curve. It's a huge learning curve. Running the finances of a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I have a lot of respect for people Harry Rosenblum, who I believe also has a show on the Heritage Radio Network, and his wife, Taylor, for running the Brooklyn Kitchen, and how challenging, just how challenging that is and how stressful it is.
Do you have any kind of mentor in your life or way to sort of bounce those financial ideas off of someone who has more of a financial background?
I'm in the market. I don't. We have a cheese shop owners Facebook group. It could be more useful, I think. I think we all are just like, how do we do this? And everyone's like, I do it this way, but I don't think it's the right way.
Yeah. Well, that kind of a camaraderie alone is
the camaraderie is great. And at least, you know, even if you're just able to bitch and be like, ugh, today sucked. Like, everything went terrible.
Right. Other people understand your troubles, especially when you're at the top. It's lonely.
It is. And you can't necessarily share that information. Like if shit is fucked, you can't necessarily share it with, say, your vendors or,
Your staff.
Or your customers or your staff. There's very few people. And like, you know, you don't necessarily want to take it home with you. So there's not a lot of venues to share that. So it is really useful to have. I'm of the mind that even just obviously in this conversation, like I'm very open with the finances of our shop. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we weren't making money for a long time and now we were. That's pretty typical for a business in New York.
Right.
But I believe like a rising tide floats all boats. And I also believe that there's no reason. I think it's, I'll rephrase that. I think it's stupid.
Oh, I like this.
For owners of shops to solve the same problems that other owners of shops have already solved.
Right.
It's a waste of everyone's time. Right. Like, we should all stand on each other's shoulders.
Needs to be a bit of a centralized brain in the sense of, like, there's the same problems. And the more people you have sharing how they're dealing with them, the better the solutions are going to be.
It just seems like hazing otherwise. Like, this person needs to pay their dues by failing.
Right.
And if they, you know, if they make it through, maybe then I'll share some kernels of wisdom. I 100% don't subscribe to that.
Right. And I think it's also, I referenced the last show that I did with Andy Hatch a lot. I've been referencing it a lot since then because Andy had so many nuggets, golden nuggets of wisdom. And one of the nuggets that he had was about how unique it is to the cheese industry that we have a lot of people who do a job one way, one place, and then just go and do the same exact thing in another place. And that there's not that much
variation.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I'll contrast that with, say, butchers. So employing butchers, like
butcher shops, I don't know anything about butchers.
They don't share info. They don't share pricing.
They keep it close to the chest.
They do. They don't share recipes. None of that stuff. Huh. It's very much like, you know, we made it. Like, you know,
good luck. Or I hope you fail.
Yeah. Right. I'll see you at the annual holiday party, and we can all sneer at each other.
Interesting.
It's very much like that.
So have your butchers, and I know that when you opened, your butcher was sort of a partner of the business in a way, or
we
one
tried,
of your lead
on the way to opening.
Folks.
I tried to set up a situation where our first butcher would be a partner in the business, and she ended up dropping out of the business right before it opened, which was stressful.
Stressful at the time, but seems like you've bounced.
Stressful time, but ultimately back. Totally great.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
Good ultimately.
Yeah.
And so how are your like butchering team? How do they, since it sounds like that world is different from the one you've created in the shop, how are they reacting to it? Like, are they sort of surprised by the approach?
They definitely, I think, don't necessarily know how to read me. Like, I have a new butcher, and we sat down today, and I was like, here's how I see this, you know, looking over the next 3 months, and this is what I think we could do. This is the strategy I think we could take. Mm-hmm. But very, like, open and being like,
what do you think?
Yeah, what do you think? And he's like, well, we could make X, Y, or Z. And I was like, great, make all three, and we'll see which works. And he's just like, oh, okay, great. And my mind is like, let's, you know, there's... As long as our finances allow us to do this, and I think some stores will get into a situation where your hands are so tied behind your back that
it's hard to be creative.
Yeah. And then it becomes a vicious cycle.
Right.
And we're not in that position. And I would much rather, like, you know, if we can pay our bills every month, that's fine. We don't need to be profitable every single month.
Right.
And I'm sure we're not. But like, if we continue to try stuff and see what works, ultimately, I think we'll be fortunate enough and to hit on something. Mm. And if we're not, then it wasn't meant to be. But if we don't try, I don't really see the point. It's also boring.
Totally boring. And at the end of the day, cheese should be fun.
Yeah, cheese should be fun.
Cheese is fun.
It is. And it's and like we've done all sorts of different things. We've merged the case. We move things around. I'm constantly experimenting.
That's great.
And then I'm also like browbeating. Like, I, you know, one of my pet peeves is I hate seeing a mop thread on the floor. And it just drives me nuts.
Mop thread.
Yeah, it's a terrible phrase. Ugh. And yet almost every day, like I'll catch one because my eyes go before they find them.
Yeah.
And I'll grab the nearest employee and be like, see that? This is my pet peeve. I don't want to see it.
I've had this pet peeve.
And one day...
You know, I finally stopped twitching when there is a music playing in a store.
Oh, that's another one.
Yeah. I mean, I used to not be able to physically handle that.
I walked into my shop 6 months ago and it was like 9 a.m., 8:45 a.m. and Deanne Ward was playing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like... This is not what people want to hear before their coffee in the morning, or arguably ever, but certainly not.
Yeah, not my early morning choice.
No.
I'll leave that at
that. Not even in this neighborhood.
So, wow.
I know. I feel like we have so much more to cover.
I know. The show is coming to an end here. We are finished with our session.
We should do a 201. Like.
Oh, yeah. Well. Yeah. When we have forgotten to line up guests, right. Aaron and I will be back together in the studio. No, that doesn't happen on this show.
No, we never forget.
Never.
I can't actually. I mean, I don't know. It's pretty early for me. But
okay, one. Let's get meta here. And you already mentioned The Daily, which is a podcast we both love, and we share that love. What's another of your favorite podcasts since you're joining the team here? So one of I'm our
really fond of
hosts?
Cutting the Curd.
Okay, well done.
On the Heritage
done.
Radio Network.
Well done. Okay, it's okay to say something else.
Oh, God, I feel like I have to take out my phone. My favorite podcasts are...
Or just...
I love listening to The Illusionist.
Ooh.
The Illusionist, that's A-L-L-U.
Okay.
It is... just about the nuances of language with Helen Zaltzman is the host. She's excellent.
Okay.
They usually pick us, you know, a short topic. The last one I listened to was about, I guess what could be called nominative determinism or people with strange names.
Yes.
And what it's
and what
like,
it does, what
it does to them.
Do in their life.
Yes.
Oh, I like this.
That was super cool. I really like In Our Time, which is a British podcast that picks random historical or scientific things and just goes deep on them with three like Oxbridge educated professors.
Ooh, sounds geeky and fun.
It's very geeky. It's great also for nap time.
That's
one that,
I have a napping podcast, and actually this might help your insomnia. Now, no shade on this podcast because I actually love it, but I find that On Being is so soothing.
Oh yeah, On Being.
That when I wake up in the middle of the night, I just listen and I kind of drift off into spiritual enlightenment.
I just can't have it on when I drive.
No, no. Don't
right
do that.
Out.
Well, now it sends me into a narcoleptic fit, basically. Right. So I got to be really careful.
I will
it.
Say that the one thing this is a secret shop owner thing, is napping. As an insomniac and as someone who doesn't function that well in the late afternoon.
Naps help.
Now that I can nap.
Yeah.
I had initially like tried to put a couch in my office and it didn't work. Yeah. I knew I would need this. But now I like I can go home at 4 or 5 and take a nap until 6:30 and then work until my wife gets home and cook dinner.
Wow.
And it's like it's great.
That's great. That's a really nice.
I would be a non-functional human if I didn't do that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's to the nap.
Yeah, with you, so that's the thing is.
This is the
ultimate you haven't really
point.
Succeeded, right? You might be profitable, you might be taking home a paycheck, but if you can't nap in the middle of the day or
then
the late,
you
know,
something
during
wrong,
banking
folks.
Hours.
Okay, listeners,
you haven't truly made it.
You know what? On that note, you know, for all of you contemplating embarking on your own endeavor, take this as one of your benchmarks for success.
Right, you won't nap for the first 3 years, but afterwards, golden.
Wonderful. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Yeah, I feel like anyone that makes me sound real douchey, but it's I promise it's...
I think it's great.
Okay.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to Cutting the Curd whenever you get your podcasts. wherever you get your podcasts. We don't want you to miss out on all the cheesy fun. So we love hearing from you as well. Know that you can always email us at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org or tweet us at cuttingthecurd. Let us know what you want to learn about cheese, what you're loving, or just say hi. We'll be back next week with more from the cheese world.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. I've been so blue. Oh, crap, you're right.